everyone, and welcome to Women Who Travel, a podcast from Condé Nast Traveler. I'm Meredith Carey, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Lala Erichoglu.
Hello.
We started off this pandemic with a books episode to help transport us while we stayed home, and here we are, 99 days later, still at home and running out of books to read to help take us to other worlds, real or fictional. So we brought back two of our very favorite guests to help us stock up on more incredible books. Today we're joined by Jen Dilling-Martin, Associate Publisher at Riverhead Books. Thanks for coming back, Jen.
So happy to be back.
And Lisa Lucas, Executive Director of the National Books Foundation and soon-to-be publisher of Pantheon and Shokan Books. Thanks, Lisa.
Nice to be back.
And before we get started, I know that we need to talk about like new books that we haven't talked about before on this podcast, but I read The Yellow House by Sarah M. Brown, which Lisa had chastised me for not having read before because I love New Orleans. And it was hands down one of the best books that I've ever read. And I would highly recommend it to everyone. Just read it.
Yes, Meredith.
Amazing.
Yes.
It's so good. Yes. But now we can get to other books that we haven't already talked about. Jen, do you want to kick us off with a book that you've really loved reading?
Oh, sure. I would be honored to. I want to just warn everyone that maybe like other people on this planet, I actually found the past couple months to be very stressful. And maybe because I'm such a big traveler in real life, I didn't feel like or was not in the mood for reading books set in faraway lands because it actually felt like it would be so demoralizing and so lonely and so sad to think and fantasize about the places that I could not access right now. So this is all to say what I've been obsessively reading has been any kind of fiction that is very interior and neurotic and like about people just like stuck in their own homes grappling with the existential questions of life because hashtag mood, that is how I've been feeling for 99 days. So the first book I absolutely want to recommend, but granted, only if you are also in this kind of neurotic mood, is Jenny Offel's book Weather. This came out actually like right before the pandemic and yet so prescient. I mean, she may as well have written it for the pandemic moment. And it's this narrator, Lizzie, and Lizzie is this bitingly funny, sharp, neurotic woman who is circling around all the heavy questions of being alive as a human on our planet, like climate change and being a responsible human and life and death and a relationship to nature. And I think for anyone who loves books that are about nature or are about our human relationship to the natural world, even though this is very much in her head, it still is touching those things in such a fun and interesting way. And so I cut this little quote because this to me is like encapsulates the whole book. This is the narrator just thinking about things. And she's like, when electricity was first introduced to homes in 1903, there were letters to newspapers about how it would undermine family togetherness. A famous psychologist worried that young people would lose their connection to dusk and its contemplative moments. Ha, ha, ha. That's actually in the book. Ha, ha, ha. Except when was the last time I stood still because it was dusk?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So, Lala did a literal shiver.
On the Zooms, she did a little like shoulder shiver. So, I loved this narrator. I loved her voice. She's like asking the questions that I sit and think about, except much more brilliantly and fluidly and with such an amazing sense of humor. So, it was really a pleasure to read.
I loved that book. I just feel like her writing is so, she writes the small books that are so powerful. It's this like really densely packed matter that's just full of feeling. And it does create that sort of like pandemic-y sort of closed circuit kind of vibe. I just thought it was like, I wish I should reread it because it's short enough to actually give it like a spin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lisa, how about you? What have you been up to reading-wise?
So, I mean, my, you know, this whole plague situation definitely has me with like reduced attention span. But comics have been really getting it done for me. Graphic work has really been getting it done for me. And one of the ones that I have been just absolutely loving is Ebony Flowers' Hot Comb, which is drawn in quarterly, which actually just today won the Eisner for Best Short Story. But they're beautiful. It's, you know, it's, I think it's just, I've been really into sort of things that I haven't seen before, things that feel really different. Because I think that even in pandemic, things can get monotonous, you know, and you can still kind of be like, well, even if I have time to read, it's like, that's what I've been reading. And I think it's just her illustrations and the sort of like, you know, sisters and mothers and hair care and humor and depth. It just really struck the right nerve. It's just like, it's the illustrations are so gorgeous and weird. And I've just really loved it. And short stories have also been getting it done for me, which has been helpful. And I think graphic short stories are like winner, winner, chicken dinner. But she's just this extraordinary talent that I learned about a while ago, but hadn't picked up the actual book. I think I read it for like a prize submission. And I remember just being like, what in the world? Where did she come from? Who is this? Why didn't I know about her? She's amazing. And it's been just a real delight to go through all of the stories, which are just so smart and warm and super black and just look really, really, really interesting. So that's been like comforting, I think.
We're going round robin, Lolly.
Oh, I know. It's almost like we're around the podcast studio table. Well, like Lisa, my attention span has been short. On the last time we recorded a books episode, I think I kind of lamented about the fact that I use reading as a crutch and a source of comfort and was really struggling. But I have broken through and now I'm like reading nonstop, which is great. And I think one of the books that I really hit the ground with was Homegoing by Yaa Gyasi, which had been on my list for so long. I don't know why I hadn't read it sooner. And for those who haven't read it and aren't familiar with it, it traces the lineage of half-sisters, one of whom marries a white colonialist in Ghana and one who is taken to the US, is enslaved, and it follows their family lines almost up until the present day. And I think one of the reasons why, I mean, other than the fact that it is, the writing is so beautiful and so compelling, and also I think you learn a lot about the way the United States especially has, or at least I did as an English person, really taken form, is that it's structured almost in short stories. So if you are finding it hard to, you know, keep your attention going, you can just be absorbed in the life of one person for a chapter. And then you can put it down and move away and come back to it. And there's another person with an incredible story to tell that you can then be completely absorbed in. So I found actually having a book that was structured that way really helpful when it came to kind of breaking my reading rut. And like I said, the writing is just like so beautiful. And her new book is coming out.
Oh, so yeah, good. It was in September.
Uh-huh. Yes, hopefully you might hear her voice on this podcast, hint, hint, wink, wink,
in the coming months. Nice.
So everybody should pre-order her book, Transcendent Kingdom. We'll throw a link for that below, and it comes
which
out
also
yeah,
has
early
a
September.
Gorgeous cover. It has a gorgeous
beautiful
cover.
Beautiful.
That's a pretty book. That's a pretty book right there. Mm-hmm.
Something that I've read recently that I feel like hits at a little bit of everything that everyone has already said is a book that also came out, like, at the moment the pandemic hit, which is The City We Became by N.K. Jemisin, mm-hmm. which is a science fiction novel about if cities were reborn as people once they reach maturity. And this first book in what I'm sure is going to be a series is about New York being born and each of the different boroughs becoming a human version of themselves. And again, as New York has started to open up and I've been exploring more on my bike and getting out into different neighborhoods beyond my own, it's just completely, despite that it's like so fantastical and like not within logic, given me like so much to look forward to outside my own door, and really like pushed me to get out into the city. And yeah, it also made me want to like read way more science fiction. And now my like Goodreads is full of Ursula Le Guin. And I'm like, I have to,
yes.
I have to go wild. But I really loved it. And it's just like such a love letter to the city in the weirdest way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you. So have you read other science fiction?
I would say no, but I am like a large fantasy fan, and in my like regular outside of book consumption, what I would call a nerd. So it like fits well within like the content that I consume. I really loved reading science fiction and fantasy books when I was in high school, and then was like, I need to be like more contemporary and cool. And I think like this has just reignited that interest for me in being a little wilder.
Yeah. I'm so happy you said this. I have so many friends who are big fans of hers, and I have never read her, so.
Yeah, I haven't either, and I have a copy of that book that I like. It's on my nightstand of shame that I need to read, but it reminds me of like cities and fantasy are so fun. I read the first book that I read when pandemic set in was Parable of the Sower, and it was like this burnt out Pasadena, Southern California landscape, and it was fascinating, and it did make me like be like, oh yeah, that's where they're talking about in that book. And it was like, it gave me a whole exploration mechanism of the city that like also was feeling kind of burnout at the time that I read it. So it was an interesting, you know, prompt to get out and see a little bit of the world. It's easier here because you got a car, right? So it's like you don't have to navigate other humans. So even in the beginning, you just get in your car, put on your mask, roll up the windows, you know, don't pee or get gas, you know, and you could kind of explore from your car.
Okay, but Lisa, how are you handling dystopian fiction right now? I think I would have a nervous breakdown.
Oh, no. Jen, I read that the first day. I read it as it was. All those books have been burned. I burn them up. I made a fire in the backyard. I was like, it's cold tonight. We're burning all the books because they're traumatizing me.
Oh, my God. Burning books, but Claire V. Watkins' Gold Fame Citrus, I think I would just go jump off the bridge.
Nah,
it just would be
no. No. People were like, you should read Severance. And I was like, why in the world would I do that right now?
Hold on. I will say I had put off reading Severance because I was like, are there other books that I want to read? And Lolly was like, read it. And I was like, ooh, I don't know. And then in early April, maybe, I was like, is this a good book to read right now? And she was like, maybe. And it actually, was at the time, because it was, Severance is about a woman who continues to go to work as a pandemic starts, and she kind of starts losing track of her coworkers and her friends and all this other stuff is going on that felt very reminiscent. And then it takes a turn again for the like fantastical. And that to me was like, oh, well, it could be worse. Like we could be dealing with this plot twist that I'm not going to say anything about, but like it could be worse.
I'd like to point out that on an episode we recorded last year, Severance was one of my books because I just finished it. And I remember, Lisa, you being like, I mean, it's about the end of the world. And then we all laughed and thought, well, that'll never happen.
I will say Severance is great and Gold Fame Citrus is so good. If you do feel like you're ready for that, definitely go in that direction. But like full trigger warning about pandemics and dystopian worlds.
Fully co-sign those books, not for me right now.
Not right now.
I totally co-sign them as valuable books that people should in fact read and purchase from their local indie if they'd like to. But like, if you're built like me emotionally, maybe not today.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I also actually just, this is a complete side note, but mentioning supporting your local indie bookstore. Now that things are reopening in some semblance in New York and other parts of the country, I wanted to know if anyone has been inside a bookstore yet.
Me.
And how it felt. because I did it, and it was amazing.
I went to Books Are Magic the other day. I was the only one in there, but it was so nice. And just to be able to, like, touch all the books and read them and figure out, like, what I wanted based on how I was feeling in the moment versus, like, sitting on a page and just being like, I don't know, this one doesn't look any different from this one. Like, which one do I choose? Also, I've talked about how I'm, like, very much a buy the label for both wine and books on this podcast before, and it was really nice to hold books and be like, ooh, this one's real pretty. Gotta buy it. Have either of you, Jin or Lisa?
No.
I confess that I have been able to avoid getting a pedicure. I've been able to avoid the waxer and the eyebrow person, and I've been able to avoid many of the creature comforts that we all miss. I haven't been to a restaurant, haven't been to, but I definitely went up in that bookstore.
That was the one thing I did.
I was like, you know, it was like at a certain point, it was like, Lisa, what are you willing to die for? And it turned out it's bookstores. You know, nothing else. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing anything else. The grocery store and the bookstore, that's it. But yes, I've gone into two bookstores. I went into Skylight, and I went into a very tiny graphic novel bookstore, comic bookstore called Secret Headquarters, which felt very safe because there's just like a dude and no one else in there. So it was just sort of like, this is fine. Like, it's like, you know, are you cool, man? Okay, then we cool. Just once. And it was totally worth it on every single level. And it, like, made me feel like a human being again in a way that, like, almost nothing else has. And it was really, like, actually, like, I was by myself. It was, like, a very moving experience. Like, I really missed bookstores. Like, I actually am not okay without bookstores. It's been, for my whole life, you know, just the place that I go if I'm sad or freaked out. Like, those books are my friends now. Many of those people are my friends. Like, the colophon actually means, like, oh, these are the people who made it. And it's just like there's on so many levels, the stories, the covers, the people who made them, the authors who are friends, like it just feels like. And then the ideas, right? Like you're thinking about programming events and you're thinking about, you know, work. And it's just like it was like not having a computer in some ways, not having a bookstore. It just felt really disruptive, the not having a bookstore. And it's like, of course, I've been like locally or, you know, ordering books from all over, and you can't go in the bookstore every day, especially not in plague infested California. But it really gave me something that I think was worth it. You know, I mean, I was safe. The bookstore is doing a great job. It was definitely a risk. And I don't necessarily need everybody to run out and go to the bookstore and be like, she is co-signing, going out and doing stuff. But it just, it gave me a real, like, comfort and stability that I truly, until the day that I did that, had not had.
I forgot, like, what to do. I, like, biked over my fanny pack, and then I had three books and was like, how do I get back on my bike with these books? Oh, I don't even know. Oh, no. But, yeah, it really is, like, you know, chicken soup for the soul.
The one bookstore I went into since things have reopened in New York, it was, like, the most sort of community, like, local village atmosphere I had, like, felt since I'd sort of started moving around the city a little bit more, where it was, like, I say every single person, it was like me and like the two other people that were allowed in. But like everyone who like went and bought a book then was like, I'm so glad you're open. I've been buying online. Like, I'm so thankful that you guys are okay. Like, and it was just, it was very nice. It was very, very nice.
Is there anything that you've ordered recently, Jin, that you want to share?
Oh, man. I just want to echo the Lale's comment that I missed. But our bookstore up here isn't open yet. I can't believe all of you have open bookstores. But that the emotion, like I need the store to tell me what kind of mood I even think I'm in, if that makes sense. And it is, I do draw a blank when I'm looking at them on the screen and it doesn't really feel the same. I don't know. The only other novel that really hit me during pandemic, I did not order from a bookstore because it's a book that we're publishing this fall, but it's in the same vein as Weather. So for anyone who's already like, I loved Weather, but I still need something else. the new Sigrid Nunez book is coming in September. She won the National Book Award 2 years ago for The Friend, and her new one is, I think, even better than The Friend. So if you love The Friend, great news. This is even better. but same mood as Weather. Like, it's a neurotic woman in her own head spinning over issues of, in this case, life and aging and friendship over time. And the novel kicks off with her friend basically asking the narrator to come help her commit assisted suicide in an Airbnb. But because it's Sigrid, it's hysterically funny. Yeah, and so funny. All kinds of hijinks unfold with the, you know, the assisted suicide attempt goes like drastically awry with Airbnb consequences. And like, it's so funny. She's so funny. So
she's hilarious.
Yeah.
Speaking of women who travel, I once had the great pleasure of traveling back from North Dakota to New York City with Sigrid. And it took us about 12 hours, and I laughed the whole time. Yeah. I mean, she just has jokes. Yeah. I mean, she just has jokes on jokes. I mean, she's just a hilarious and super smart and, like, just absolutely says what she means to on top of it, which she does in her fiction, too, which is, like, I think it's just, like, one of those things where it's like, whoop, she said it. That's how her fiction reads to me. It's like, she said that shit out loud, you know?
Did you have any Airbnb escapades when you were on your road trip?
I hope not like what happens in the novel.
It was definitely not as dark as her novels. You know, she seems like a lighter person than some of the fiction. You know?
Yeah, that plot description did not go in the direction.
I'm also sold, and I cannot wait.
Like, if you're looking for something during quarantine, let me tell you. It's just about assisted suicide in an Airbnb. Girl, you gonna turn the pages all night long? Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. It's a romp. It is a romp, let me tell you. It is the assisted suicide romp we have all been waiting for.
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing.
No, but the narrator is like, oh, my God, do I really have to do this? Like, oh, shit, is she really going to ask this of me? Oh, God. You know, and it's like, it's that Sigrid voice that's in actually inflects all of her books. And, you know, it's she's funny. She's kind of like almost like a Larry David, but a like the female, more intellectual, more textured and nuanced. But it has that humor.
Yeah, she reminds us that, like, you know, when my father passed away, like, you know, the saddest thing that ever happened, like, you know, all tears, no good, want him back. But, like, the hospital can be a funny place, right? Like, it's like, so the reality of tragedy is that you can't help but find it's so ridiculous, you know, the level of your grief, the, like, you know, we had this, like, cartoony chaplain who came in and he was like, my name is Donald, not like Trump. Like duck, and then knocked over the IVs. Oh, like, you know, this is like a person who's like literally like on the way out, right? And it's just like, and this man is in here telling jokes and knocking stuff over. And I was like, you gotta be kidding. We got the Mickey Mouse chaplain up in here. You have to leave, sir. Which is actually hilarious, right? Like, I mean, it was like, you know, if you wrote that in a novel, it'd be a funny scene. And she gets that about life. Sigrid really understands that no matter how horrible it is, you know, it's ridiculous to be alive. You know, it's ridiculous and it's funny and it's like, and yet we must do it. So it's like, I love that about her. She really does actually, all jokes aside about the suicide in the Airbnb, but she really does understand. This is funny. I mean, honestly, how many times have you laughed at something insane happening during this pandemic? I mean, it's just like, it's just like, you know, you find yourself like literally peeing on the side of the road, you know, behind a dumpster at the Rose Bowl, which has truly happened in the past 4 months, which I did not find, you know, I did not expect to find myself in those circumstances. And, you know, you really just have to laugh when you're sitting there with your pants around your ankles, you know, at the Rose Bowl, formerly populated, you know, in the middle of a plague. It's like, okay, I'll play world.
Is there anything you've read recently that has made you laugh like that, Lisa?
I read Sam Irby's book a couple weeks ago. But you know, the one, everybody's like loves all the essays, but the one that got me, that really just absolutely killed me, was the one where she was talking about, like, sex is great, but, I mean, I'm actually going to grab the book and read you a couple of the sex is great sections.
She's amazing.
Sure, sex is fun, but have you ever eaten the leftovers before everyone else wakes up? Sure, sex is fun, but have you ever deeply related to a nihilist meme? Sure, sex is fun, but have you ever done low-impact, high-intensity interval training along with a YouTube video when no one else could see you? Sure, sex is fun, but have you ever been to Trader Joe's right after a restock? Sure, sex is fun, but have you ever given a crying baby back to its parent? I mean, and she just goes on and on and on, and it's, like, sort of ridiculous. It's like, how long can this joke go? And the answer is forever, if you're her. So that one actually made me laugh and was like actually like a real moment of like, I needed the belly laugh. And I think I actually need to like read more humor, watch more comedy, because laughter really is the antidote, I think, to this, you know, knowledge also, like wear a mask. is the antidote. But also, laughter keeps the soul whole. And it just, like, I hadn't laughed like that in a while. And she just truly is funny. She also just does not care what you think. Much like Sigrid. You know, she's, like, uninterested in what you think. You know, and it's just, like, I love that she just says it all.
Yeah.
I have sort of the opposite next book. Not funny, but I was actually, it was a reread that I was inspired to do after I saw Gia Tolentino write this very small piece for The New Yorker about reading Wolf Hall in the pandemic. And so I'd read it before, but it is, you know, it's a dense book and I've definitely, like, enjoyed it a lot more on the second go. But one of the reasons why, and I guess this kind of taps into the Severance vibe, but one of the reasons why I decided to reread it was that there are periods of time throughout Wolf Hall, first of a trilogy about Thomas Cromwell and Henry VIII in the Tudor era. And there is a plague on London every summer called the sweating sickness, which was a real thing that did actually happen in the mid to late 16th century, and lots of Londoners died from it, and it's very grim. But it was this sort of reminder that, like, life has, like, always been shit, and people are always coming up against this stuff, and it comes in waves. And there was this section in the book where there's a character who's talking about how, like, well, London can't shut down. You can't shut down an entire city. And I, like, looked out the window and I was like, you can. And yeah, I was, like, surprised how much I enjoyed it. But, and it was also because it is historical fiction, and it was set off so, it felt so distant. It still was an escape. Like, I could still kind of just immerse myself in this world that was completely unlike my own, and get lost in it. And I was actually surprised by how much I enjoyed reading it.
I've been saving the last two books because I'm just, like, I feel like there's a finite number of them. And so I've been, like, you know, just saving them for, like, a moment where I really have time to do. She's so, and she actually is funny. She can land
there
a joke.
Are some funny lines
she can
in
land,
there.
So, she can land a joke for sure. I mean, it's like an unexpected place, but she's got, like, some, she seems like she'd be, like, really fun to have drinks with.
There have been lines in that book where I've, like, chortled out loud and then been like, oh, I didn't expect this page to make me laugh.
Despite that, I think you still need an intervention because you're reading Severance and Wolf Hall in the middle of this and
no,
Wedding
Severance,
Plague. Like,
Severance,
I mean, it's like...
Severance I read back in the fall, and then when everything was happening in March, I was like, wait, I read this book. Why is it happening?
Lale, was the sweating sickness like a virus, or it was just like it got so hot in London in the summer?
It was a virus that only came in the summer, and you died within 24 hours. So it was very abrupt.
Woo!
You know what? I don't even need to know about that because that could come back. I don't want to know about that.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to know about any variety of plague. Some people are writing these articles. There's 3,562 viruses that have been identified, but there's billions more, and they're all waiting to find a human host and kill us all. I was like, miss me with it. I'm done. I don't want to know about any of them. I would like to be surprised by any future pandemics and also have some good leadership that can help us navigate through it, all of it, like the countries that seem to be having a better time of it. That's all I want to know. But I don't want to know about any of the 1 billion plagues.
Well, in Wolf Hall, when London is struck down by the sweating sickness, Henry VIII likes to go off hunting in the countryside. So there's a, you know, familiar parallel there.
Yeah, right.
No, so I heard two of you finally might have read the novel that we all discussed, like, in the winter as the big novel of the summer, which is The Vanishing Half.
Which, like, very much came to fruition as the, like, biggest novel of the summer. I actually went on a rescue mission to the office to safely recover my copy of the book, which Jin had given me a galley of. And I think I read it in 2 days. It was one of those books where, again, kind of like everyone else, I've had a really short attention span and have been, like, picking up and dropping off of reading this whole time. And two nights in a row, I stayed up until like 2:30 in the morning reading the book and was like, ooh, I gotta go to sleep. I gotta go work tomorrow. But it is so good. It is so good. And now I have to go read The Mothers because I haven't read that yet.
So The Vanishing Half is the second novel by this young writer, Britt Bennett. Her first novel was The Mothers. It was a big Times bestseller and everyone loved it. But The Vanishing Half has turned into this number one blockbuster bestseller. And I just want to say, Props to Brit. She is the first Black woman to be a number one fiction hardcover seller in at least a decade. We're waiting for like the final data on how long it's been, but we're so, so thrilled for her. And the basic premise is that there's these two light-skinned twin sisters who are such tight friends when they're young. And through a series of circumstances that we won't reveal, one ends up deciding to run away and lead a life passing as a white woman, and the other stays in the small town, rural South, where they grew up and doesn't know what happened to her sister or why her sister ran away and left. And it goes and goes and goes from there.
I just think that she does that choral voice that she uses. I mean, she's actually like just a... The thing about Brit is like, right, she's telling like a good ripping yarn, right? But she's also just like a really stunning technical writer, right? So it's like she's got all the craft stuff at the same time as the story stuff, which it happens, obviously, but doesn't happen that often. And it's just like such a pleasure to read her. I've only just begun the new one. And I like sort of just like want to really get myself into a place where I can sit with it. I also like historically love passing narratives because they're just terrible. Like it's just like, you know, just all the old movies and all the old books. And, you know, it's just sort of like, and then there, I think it's in the 12 Tribes of Hattie. There's this incredible story by Ayanna Mathis. There's an incredible passing narrative about a couple that moves up north. And one is a jazz player, but is kind of passing, and his wife confronts him in this like jazz club bathroom to like great tragedy. It just like, it's just the sadness of us, I think, is often wrapped up in, you know, those of us who are compelled to try not to be us. And I just think it's such an interesting story because it really gets down to a lot of the different external and internal discrimination, self, you know, worth issues that come up, you know, in a Black life, you know, or in a Black family or in a Black community or in a Black town or in a Black, you know, city, whatever it is. And I just think it's, I'm really excited to finish up because she's just such a stunning writer. So I've been kind of saving that one, just like The Wolf Hall, which is like, I know I'm going to love this book. And what I've read of it already, I'm obsessed with, but it's like, I'm almost not ready to like be done with not knowing how much I'm going to love it.
Every book piece of fiction I read, I always want it to be the one that I stay up till 2 a.m. in the morning reading because I cannot put it down and I am so utterly absorbed in it. But it's actually really, really rare to have that experience with a book. It's that feeling you have when you're a kid reading, and then I feel like I'm constantly trying to recreate it as an adult. And Vanishing Half has done that for me. Like I, when you're not reading it, you're thinking about it, and it feels alive on the page, and you just, oh god, you can't stop turning the pages. It's like the best.
Do you remember that scene from The Neverending Story where the little boy who's kind of telling the story, he's sitting with his little tent in that room and he has the apple and the half the sandwich. He's like, I'm only gonna eat a little bit because there's so much more to read. Like I always think of him as like my ideal moment, like the feeling that I have when it is an ideal reading experience where you're just like, I've got to figure out a way to just push through because this is the best ever and I'm never gonna stop.
And you're like, okay, I'll just read 10 more pages. And then you read the next 10 pages and you're like, well, I'll just read another 10. Or like, I'll just read until it gets to midnight. And then it's
also the first book that I've read in a long time where it ended. And I was like, oh, I have to start over again because like these characters are so layered. And like, there's no way that I got everything out of this on the first read. I have to start again. So I'm reading one book and then I actually think I'm going to reread it.
A friend of mine also said that she finished it and she was like, I haven't had an ending like that in a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now I'm very excited.
Meredith, I also feel like you want to start it again because you want to go now, once you know everything that's going to end up happening, you want to almost go back and see those young girls through new eyes and be like, whoa, this is all of what's coming and re-experience it. Then with the knowledge somehow.
Yeah. It's like Fates and Furies. Like you had to read that one twice.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Totally like that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this makes me so happy. I'm just so happy at how much everyone is loving this novel.
And for anyone that has a copy of The Vanishing Half at home, turn to the acknowledgement section and you will see Jin's name there.
Very exciting. Are there any books that you haven't read yet that you are really excited to pick up?
I have one that I'm excited to read. And I haven't read yet, but I loved Man vs. Nature so much, which is a short story collection that probably came out in 2013, 2014, by Diane Cook, who is also a Booker longlister. I think she is a stunning, brilliant genius. And I'm just really excited to read the new one, The New Wilderness, which I haven't started. I'm just, like, excited for her brain. Like, you know, the writers that you just wait for forever and ever? She just wrote the one book. I fell in love with her because she had a short story in Guernica, where I was working at the time. And then the collection came out, and it was even better than the one story. And then everyone's been obsessed with this new novel, and it's, like, the thing I cannot wait to get to.
Jen, is there anything that you're super excited to read that's either coming out soon or that you just have on your own nightstand of shame?
Coming, I know my nightstand of shame. Coming soon this fall, actually, I thought of it because of some things Lisa mentioned, is a new story collection by this writer, Danielle Evans. She has not had a story collection in 10 years. Her first one was called Before You Suffocate Your Own Fool Self, which
best
tells you everything. I mean, literally the best title ever. And the new collection is called The Office of Historical Corrections, but it's stories again, but once again, funny, which we all have agreed together is a huge priority during pandemic. So funny. And then also several stories, one in particular coming to mind, that are about passing in America and race in America. And she's great. She's funny, sharp, political, but in a smart way and not a preachy way.
I should add that I'm very excited to read lots of books, and I'm desperate to read that book. Desperate to read that book. Yeah. She is extraordinary.
Amazing. Well, you'll find links to purchase all of those books on bookshop.org that we mentioned in the show notes. And then, you know, obviously you are heavily encouraged to order and pick up from your local indie bookstore. If people want to follow all the exciting things that you, Lisa, have coming up, because you have so many exciting things coming up, where can they find you on the internet?
Probably on Twitter, Lika Luca, LikaLuca.
And Jin?
Also on the Twitter, it's Jin with four N's, so JynnNNe.
I'm at Oh Hey There Mayor.
I'm at Lale Hannah.
Be sure to check out Women Who Travel on Instagram and subscribe to our newsletter. Again, links to all the books that we've mentioned will be in the show notes. Be sure to check them out. We'll talk to you next week.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.